Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBNRepublicBroadcasting.org. It's the new dawn of free speech. Oh, it's a new day, and it's clear skies. Oh, it's so nice. So go to RepublicBroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. The operator is standing by. We've got Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. What a day it is today. I mean, here we are. We've just had the German elections. There's so much to talk about. And, you know, it's a weird position to be in because on the face of this, there's a lot to celebrate. But I think the important thing to note before we start that celebration is fundamentally, there's also a lot, I think, to be concerned about with those German figures. So I'm not really sure where you want to start and how you get into this. We could start with the bad stuff and then, you know, we should start with the good stuff. We should start with, you know, on the face of this, what is the positives, and go from there, I think. But, you know, you're obviously the boss. You're the man whose show it is. So let me know how you want to proceed.
Well, let's get the results of the election. Do you have them in front of you, or do you want me to...
Let me do some Googling. I'm a bit of a Googler, so here, let's get this Googling up. German election results. I pretty much know them, but I'm going to pull them up anyway. I pretty much knew them anyway, but I'm going to read them out to you. So the headline figure, which looks really, really promising, is that the AfD... the Alternative for Deutschland, the Alternative for Germany, has taken 152 seats, and it took 10.3 million votes. Now, that is incredible. 20% of the vote, and it's the second biggest party in Parliament. So the headline result looks fantastic, and I think there is genuinely something to celebrate there. So I'm not coming on today to pour scorn on things. I'm not coming on today to say it's all rubbish, we're doomed, etc., etc. There's obviously a lot of people willing to vote for what is an anti-immigration, you know, close the borders, deport the illegals party. And obviously this party has been praised by Trump, Vance. It's been helped by Elon Musk. And you can see there clearly is something big happening here. There is clearly... Sorry about that. I've been a naughty boy and left my phone on. There we go. So there clearly is something good happening. And you clearly can see some progress being made. Now, saying that, it's one in five Germans voting for things to be reversed. Now, at that point, you've got to say, this is a good thing. One in five Germans, it's obviously a good thing, one in five Germans voting for things to be reversed is a good thing. And I'm not going to say it's not. I wish there was more people voting AfD, but one in five is a pretty high watermark. I think this is the largest vote any anti-immigration party's ever had in Germany post-Second World War. So that's a good thing. You know, the Germans do seem to be waking up to some degree. So in no way, and I want to really labour this point, in no way am I saying that that is bad. It's good. I'm pleased that more people are voting for a party like this. However, the initial, yay, this is good, soon starts to give way to feelings of unease when you look at how people actually voted. So yes, one in five voted for a change that you, me, most of the listeners of this show would like to see. And that is Germany getting rid of the migrants, closing the borders, and ensuring the indigenous German people, the white Germans, take back their own destiny. That is really important. And I'm over the moon at that. One in five, brilliant. But four in five voted for more of the same or for open borders. And that might sound, what do you mean, Mark? Who voted for open borders? Well, I said 20% of people voted for the AFD, but there are three left-wing, open borders, let's bring them in parties in Germany. There is the mainstream sort of centre-left SPD. There is the Greens. The Greens are one of the most far-left groups in Germany. And there is also a party called Die Linke. And Die Linke, which I'll refer to it by how it's actually translated, literally translated, it is the left. So those three parties together, which are open borders parties, polled a total of 37%, pushing double what the AfD got. Now, that for me is a massive disappointment. To actually have a situation like we've had in Germany. Now, Germany always seems to be the worse off when it comes to stabbings, terror attacks, people ploughing into crowds of people. And we saw all that before the election. We saw stabbings. We saw cars ploughing into crowds of people. It seemed to be non-stop in Germany in the run-up to these elections. But despite all that, 4 out of 5 voted for more of the same. And, you know, 2 out of 5, almost 2 out of 5, voted for more immigration. So the headline figure is great. Good, yep, 20% voting for anti-immigration policies. But then you look under the headline figure and you look how other people voted. And I've got to say, Patrick, I'm somewhere between bemused and angry about this. Final point before I throw it back to you. The party with the largest share of the vote is their Conservative Party. And their Conservative Party is Merkel's old party. And what did Merkel do? She flooded Germany with migrants. So this was very much an election where the sort of headline figure that everyone's talking about makes you go, yes, we're getting somewhere. But when you look past that headline, when you look past the sensational, well, the far right took 1 in 5 votes in Germany, the best since the Second World War. Oh, my God. When you look past that, the results were actually very, very, you know, in some ways bemusing, in other ways disappointing. And my final thing before I throw it back to you, and we can talk about some of the breakdowns of, you know, how people voted across different parts of the demographic pyramid. But the thing that really gets me here is if there's not another general election for 5 years, what will be the demographic shift over that 5-year period? Because we're so close to countries like America, Germany, France and Britain becoming places where the white population is a minority. 5 years is crucial. We're not back in the 1970s where, you know, we've got 5, 6, 7 decades or, you know, whatever. We're not saying like, oh, it could be 100 years before we're a minority. We've got time to sort this out. At this crucial juncture, a 5-year period between this and this election and the next election could see indigenous Germans dropping to around 60% of the population, because at the moment they're about 66% of the population, about 2/3. But that could drop dramatically over 5 years of more immigration.
Okay. Well, I'm going to add a couple of wrinkles to this, which may give you some more optimism. I don't know. So the leader of the AfD, or, you know, their candidate for chancellor, I forgot her name, but
Alice Weidel.
Alice Weidel, right. And she has been accusing Friedrich Merz, the leader of the Christian Democrats, who will become the next chancellor, of taking all her positions. Now, to what extent that's actually true, I'm not sure, because I didn't follow it that carefully. But she's been saying, look, you campaigned on our positions, so you should form a coalition with us. And he's saying, no, you're a bunch of Nazis. I'm not going to form a coalition. And then she says, well, okay, so if you form a coalition with the left, you're not going to be able to achieve any of the things you campaigned on, including, I guess he was making anti-immigration statements. So if you consider that, 28.5% of the people voted for a party that was making fake promises of reining in immigration. Also, then there's one other party. In order to get seats in the parliament in the German system, you have to have 5% of the vote. And there's another party, the Sarah Wagenknecht party, and they got 4.98%. They just barely missed the 5% cutoff to get members of parliament. So if you and they were anti-immigration. They're an anti-immigration leftist party. They had split off a few years ago. They split from that party of the left. The party of the left, by the way, is the they're the successors of the East German Communist Party. So if you add those three together, well, then you've got a majority of German voters who voted for parties that at least nominally were immigration hawks. So if you're going to evaluate the mood of the German people, well, it's better than, 53% is better than 20%, even though, the bulk of that 53% were voting for a party making false promises, because they're going to make a coalition with the Olaf Scholz's party, with the Social Democrat Party. The two parties together can make a coalition, and is it going to be a workable coalition? Now, had Sarah Wagenknecht's party gotten a few more votes and gotten their seats, then a Christian Democrat Social Democrat coalition wouldn't have been enough for a majority, and they would have had to bring in the Greens, and that would have been really really odd. But that didn't happen. One more word about this Sarah Wagenknecht. I don't follow German politics that closely, so but I used to follow it a little more closely. It turns out she's married to a much older man, a man named Oscar Lafontaine, who I do remember. Oscar Lafontaine was the he was the head of the SPD, SDP, what is it, the Social Democrat Party, and back in the 1990s, and he led the Social Democrats to one of their worst election defeats. I guess it was their worst election defeat until yesterday. He led them on that. Well, what's significant about Oscar Lafontaine? Well, in that election in the 1990s, when he was running against Helmut Kohl, he was an anti-immigration candidate. Well, he was not just a candidate. I mean, he was an anti-immigration leader of the main opposition party. And I thought that's interesting. Maybe it's just, he's not directly involved in politics anymore, as far as I know. But his wife is. His wife is much younger. So there's anti-immigration sentiment in Germany, which I think just the headline figure is not capturing. So I'll throw it back to you, Mark.
I think that's a positive way to look at things, but I can't really classify anyone voting for the CDU as being anti-immigration, not in a serious way, because the CDU is the party that has absolutely flooded Germany with migrants over the last few decades, really, or the last decade or so, certainly under Merkel. Now, my issue is this. I feel what you're seeing here is just going to lead fundamentally to more of the same. I think we're going to get more of the same, and I don't think we're actually going to get anything significant in terms of actual the actual change that we need. And one of the things that really concerns me is the voting patterns of the youngest in Germany. So the voting patterns of the youngest in Germany is 21% of those between 18 and 24 voted for the AfD, but 27%, the most popular party amongst young people in Germany, is actually the left, Linke. And that's really obviously quite concerning. And I think that number's obviously going to go more in that direction as immigration increases, as the demographic change takes place. And I think the Germans are now in a very, very difficult position, because really, you know, the CDU should be going into coalition with the AfD, and there should at least be some immigration control. But that isn't going to happen. And I believe because of that, we are going to see maybe another, you know, 5 years of record immigration. And I can't remember, I can't remember which African country it was, but Germany have got a deal with an African country to take, you know, hundreds of thousands of migrants over a set period of time to, you know, be brought in as workers, as sort of, you know, skilled workers, which makes you shudder really at the sort of effect that will have on the demographic situation in Germany. But we're seeing this time and time and time again, that what's happening now in developed countries is people are waking up to the migrant issue, but they're waking up, unfortunately, a little bit too slowly, and the parties they're voting for are a little bit too weak, and everything is unfortunately a little bit too far behind the curve in terms of what we actually need if we're going to turn things around. And I did a stream on Friday night, because at the moment across a number of countries we keep hearing this mantra of remigration is inevitable. We keep hearing that again and again, like remigration is inevitable, we're just about to pack them all off, they'll all be sent home, don't you worry, we're going to fix things in record time. And I'll be honest, I actually don't see that. I don't see that as being realistic. I think that unfortunately, the rate at which people are waking up is just sadly a little bit too slow. It's not quite what we need. And unfortunately, as time goes by, we are going to see white people become sadly a minority in a lot of these countries, a lot of these European countries. And that will be because, unfortunately, people just aren't waking up quickly enough. So people are waking up, but not at the rate we need. And I said this when I did my stream the other night. We also see something else, this other quite curious sort of situation. And this curious situation is the policies that the anti-migration parties have now are policies that would have genuinely worked had they been enacted in the 1970s. So say in the UK, had you know, some of these policies come into force in the 1970s, I think we genuinely would have been saved. I think we would have seen a situation where, you know, everything would have been pretty good. But now, I just think it's in most cases too little, too late. So, like what you're seeing Labour doing now, 633 migrants being deported per week. Well, it's better than none, but it's nowhere near enough. It doesn't even, you know, it's dwarfed by the number of illegal immigrants coming in per week, let alone the legal migrants, where the numbers are much higher to a shocking degree. And I think what we're actually seeing
by the number of illegal immigrants coming in per week, let alone the legal migrants, where the numbers are much higher to a shocking degree. And I think what we're actually seeing here is, unfortunately, a situation that puts us on, you know, this is, we're on a back foot. We're on a back foot now. And, you know, unfortunately, what we're actually witnessing is swamping migration. And people's natural resistance to that is always a step behind what it needs to be. So we are currently a step behind where we need to be with remigration. If we want, you know, white Brits to be a majority and maintain that majority, we need remigration at a more rapid rate than we're currently seeing. And if we don't get that, then the writing's going to be on the wall. The inevitability will be that, sadly, we do become a minority. And I know it's grim saying that, but I can't see at the moment any other way. And I think the same is going to happen here in the UK. I think that's exactly the same thing is going to happen here in the UK. And you say, well, what do you mean the same thing? Well, the same thing in that we will get Nigel Farage's party winning a record number of seats. And that's fantastic. It's a step in the right direction. But the policies that they're endorsing are policies that would genuinely have worked if they'd been enacted maybe, you know, in the, again, 1970s. The 1970s, 1980s policies, they're not policies that will work today because things are so much more advanced. So in the UK, for example, you know, we're told that, you know, we're white Brits are 74.4% of the population. Well, that was in 2021. Now, even pundits on TV are admitting, well, that number's not right. You know, it's a lot further gone than that now. You know, looking at the figures, it's likely that white Brits are around 70% of the population. So straight away, you're like, well, that's not a good thing, is it? That's a bad thing. You know, that these politicians and media pundits are saying, well, it's that low already. But when you look at the youngest age groups, the youngest age groups are the most multicultural by some way. And those young age groups are the ones that will pretty soon be inheriting the country. And white British births are already hitting an all-time low of 55.6% of all white births in maternity wards. At that point, once you dip under that level where the baby's being born, you're not just, even if you close the borders and stopped any more coming in, the babies being born go against you. That, I think we can both agree, is a pretty grim situation to face. And
there is.
You know, I'm looking at that, and I'm not looking at that from a negative perspective. I'm not trying to black pill anyone. I'm not saying like, oh my God, you know, this is, you know, this can't be won because, you know, we haven't got the will or anything like that. What I'm saying is, it gets to a point where a ship takes on so much water that it doesn't matter how quickly you're, you know, pumping the water out or sloshing the water out. It's taken on too much, and it's inevitable that it's going to go down. It's going to sink. And unfortunately, I feel that we're hitting that now in many countries, possibly America included. But, you know, the UK is definitely one of those countries. And the solutions that are being offered up at the moment are so far beneath the solutions we actually need. I look at it and I am genuinely concerned. I look at this and I think to myself, well, this is actually really concerning. You know, how much longer are people going to, you know, put faith in these electoral systems? The, you know, and I personally, I mean, I've been speaking to a German friend of mine called Sascha Rossmüller. He's a member of Die Heimat. They were formerly the NPD in Germany. And they've been writing some interesting papers about the way the votes were split in Germany. And it does make for interesting reading, because in Germany, the votes were split in quite an interesting manner. in West Germany, the situation is
interesting. This is something I was going to bring up, so go for it.
It's good to know we're on the same wavelength. In West Germany, the situation is pretty bleak. But in East Germany, interestingly, the situation is not as bleak. The situation is actually looks better in, you know, East.
And when you say the situation, do you mean the level of migration or the attitudes towards immigration?
The attitudes towards immigration. Well, both. I mean, demographically, things are better in the East for whites, but attitudes towards immigration are more negative in the East as well. And my friend Sasha has just written an interesting article that actually talks about this, saying, you know, is it time to look at Germany and say, well, we need West Germany to basically break away? That, you know, West Germany and East Germany are out of sync again to an incredible degree. And
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone to purchase their food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
West Germany to basically break away. That, you know, West Germany and East Germany
are, you know, are out of sync again to an incredible degree. And fundamentally, you know, do we need the two to break up? Do we need a breaking up of Germany to save what we can? And I think that's a very interesting suggestion. And it's in line with some of the things I've been speaking about with other nationalists. And I would say, you know, I can't say fundamentally sort of yes, because I'm not a German and it's not sort of my real place to say that. But what I can say is we are looking at a situation where that might be what's necessary if you were going to save, you know, people of German descent. And you are seeing that as well in places like America. You've obviously already reached that point in South Africa, but you are getting to a point where people from all over the, you know, well, not I'm not going to say European world, but all over Europe and in countries that were founded by people of European descent, you are starting to see a number of people now campaigning for the same kind of things that more radical voices like us would suggest. And I think America, Germany, Britain and France now, I think unfortunately the die is cast, and I think those countries are headed towards a situation where there is an inevitable Balkanization. And once you reach, you know, and that really unfortunately is the only way it's going to go. Things are too far gone, and sadly the situation is that most people who are voting for sort of anti-immigration measures are sort of a step behind the curve. They aren't quite ready to vote for a party radical enough to actually make a lasting change. So what do? They vote for a softer party, somebody like, you know, say in Germany, the Christian Democrats, they've said some anti-immigration things, but that'll just be, well, we're going to reduce the number coming in, but there's not going to be a mass deportation of those already there. And unless you do have some kind of mass deportation, unfortunately, what are you going to be faced with? Well, you're going to be faced with a situation where you cannot actually turn around the situation we're in.
Well, you know, you mentioned East Germany. This is one of the things I wanted to mention. AF, the Alternative for Deutschland, the anti-immigration party. If you look at a map of Germany and the districts that were won by the Alternative for Deutschland, and the districts that were won by the CPU, is that what it's called? The Conservative
CDU.
CDU, this Conservative Democratic Union, Conservative Democratic Party. There's technically two parties that are always in, two Christian Democratic parties. One's based in Bavaria. I think it's the one that has Union at the end of the name, and the other is the rest of Germany. But they're always together. And if you look at the map, and it is almost identical to the map of East and West Germany. So, and if this raises one interesting question, which I don't want to get into too much, but why is it that the countries that were on the other side of the Iron Curtain, the countries that were in the, that had communist governments during the Cold War, are doing so much better in so many ways, like at least demographically? You look at, East and West Germany, you look at Hungary, you look at Slovakia, maybe not the Czech Republic, but Slovakia. Poland is relatively nationalistic. And you've got in Romania this nationalist who won the election, and then they nullified the election, but it looks like he's going to win again. And then, of course, Russia. And then you could even go outside of, you know, if you're looking at outside, China's doing really well. And at least demographically, certainly not economically, but at least demographically, North Korea is doing so much better than South Korea, not economically, not necessarily politically, but at least demographically. But that's I don't want to go too much more into that. Before we move on, we should move on a little bit to the United States, but a couple more data points I want to get into. One, you mentioned the youth voting for the party of the left. And one question I have, which is a question we probably won't be able to answer, but, you know, is Of course, the youth in Germany is much less white than the senior citizens. So I'm wondering how much that had to do with it.
Well, apparently the senior citizens voted even, they were even more negative towards the AfD, if you can believe it.
And the senior citizens, I have the feeling it's just like what you talk about with in Britain, you know, when you'd go around that so many people would just say, well, my father voted for Labour, or my father voted for Tories, so I'm voting for Tories. And there's probably just a lot of dyed in the wool. But the other data point I wanted to bring up before we move on is election result by level of education. And so if you look at basic education, meaning up to high school, but nothing beyond high school or their equivalent of high school, and the alternative for Deutschland was 28%. And then you look at with higher education, I don't know, they're too small to see what the number is. It's probably somewhere around 10%. For the Greens and the party of the left, the Greens are at 19% for people with higher education, 19%, but probably only like 5% or less for people without the high education. And it's the left party is not quite as extreme, but it's along those lines. And so, you know, the you might even look at the left party and the Green party as maybe being the parties of indoctrination. It's amazing when you look at the what kind of government would have been formed if only people with a college education could vote. And it would be a completely suicidal government. So I'm throwing out those two data points. You can respond to them, or if you want, we can move on to America.
Well, I mean, I've got to say this. I do find it extremely concerning that amongst the whitest age group, which is, you know, your elderly people, they're not voting, unfortunately, for they're not voting for the party they need to be voting for. They're people who are thoroughly brainwashed and thoroughly sort of, you know, anti-Nazi because of years of indoctrination. They're not going to vote for the party they need to vote for. Equally, the young people, that will be the most diverse battleground. And those young people aren't voting for the AfD either. And I kind of see both of those things as worrying. However, I also see other problems emerging for the AfD, because the AfD came out of sort of a, it was like a Eurosceptic movement. And it is very much split between a progressive wing run by Alice Weidel, who is a lesbian with a non-white sort of partner, so non-white girlfriend.
She doesn't even live in Germany. They actually live in Switzerland. I just became aware of that yesterday.
Well, it's a bizarre situation to be in. So, you know, it's a bizarre situation to be in. But that is the situation that you face. You've got her who runs it, but then there are more radicals within the organization. So it isn't just all about Alice and her partner. There are others within the organization who are more radical, which is obviously a good thing. And, you know, I personally look at that and think, yeah, good, excellent, superb. But it does pose a potential threat, because unfortunately, the AfD could well splinter, and I'm very sure that the state will have or will be paying a real interest in the AfD from now on, and the state will be looking for a way to break up the AfD, and I think there is the chance of it shattering apart. And if it did shatter apart, it would be an east-west split, and I've had this out with nationalists in the past. But I do think it's absolutely clear that there is this east-west split. There are countries which were behind the Iron Curtain, and those countries have emerged more intact, sort of mentally, you know, physically, racially, than those who were poisoned by Western liberal democracy. And I think something that you can take away from all this is those that were in the developed Western parts of Europe have been more deracinated and more harmed on a racial level than those who fell the other side of the Iron Curtain, who didn't have money, they didn't have abundance, and they certainly didn't have mass immigration. And now Europe has, you know, is having a much, or the European Union is having a much greater problem selling multiculturalism to people who were once part of the Soviet Union than it is selling multiculturalism to people who were part of the quote unquote free West. And it is quite interesting how, you know, communism has had less of a lasting negative effect upon people than rampant capitalism.
Yeah. Okay. So we only have about eight minutes left or so. And I want to spend a little bit of time on the United States. So yesterday I hear this news that in the first month of Trump's presidency, there were something like 41,000 deportations, 41,000, which is about 1,300 a day. And of course, you know, we had talked about maybe the, you know, on the first day of his office, he had like 800 or 1,200 or something like that. And we pointed out that, well, at this rate, it would take, you know, take 50 years to get them all deported. But the news from yesterday is Trump hears 41,000, and he and his border czar, Tom Homan, are so upset that they fired the person in charge of deportation, whose name I don't know. It is a Hispanic last name. 41,000, actually, you know, when you're just getting started, I don't even know if that's such bad numbers, but it's not good enough for Trump. Now, you know, and I don't want to get into Ukraine today because we don't have time for it, but Ukraine and Russia. But in a lot of ways, even though Trump says all sorts of retarded things, he hasn't really done retarded things. And as we were talking about maybe a week or two ago, actually, it's really hard to complain about what's actually happened. You can complain plenty about what he's said, but, you know, what difference does, like, him saying that he wants to build the Riviera on Gaza hasn't killed anybody. So what do you think of this 41,000? And
look, I'm all for positivity. Okay. And I think my sort of takes on Trump shocked a lot of people in the movement, because when we started to see, you know, Trump, when we saw Trump coming to power, or just before the election, I was one of the people in the movement who was like, well, I would rather vote for Trump than I would for Harris. I said that, and I was very outspoken in saying that, because there was a lot of people who really, really hated Trump because of his rampant Zionism, etc. There's a lot of people who said they could, including David Duke was like, oh, I could never vote Trump. And I was like, well, look, I think we're being a bit hasty. Then there was others like me and Kevin McDonald who were like, well, we see certain good things coming from this. And I think we've been slightly vindicated on that. And I think what Trump is doing in terms of illegal immigration is good. He seems to be trying to control the borders, and he seems to be actually trying to get this deportation thing genuinely working. But, and there is this huge, huge but, you know, it was coming.
But Nicki Minaj size.
It's a Nicki Minaj size but. And the issue is that, unfortunately, it doesn't really matter. And that sounds extremely negative to say it doesn't really matter. But even if he keeps deporting at this rate, it's only 2 million of 8 million illegal migrants gone in 4 years, which isn't enough. He is trying to ramp it up. That's good. Round of applause. Yes, I completely agree. But the other problem that we've got, and this is another massive problem, is whilst Trump is doing all this about illegal migrants, he keeps saying we are going to ramp up the legal migrants to a new level that we've never seen before, because I'm going to be creating so many jobs that we need talented people from all over the world to come and take those jobs. And that's what really concerns me, because it's the same in the UK, that the number of illegals coming in, and we don't want any illegals coming in, but the number of illegals coming in is so dwarfed by the number of legals coming in, that even if you did say tomorrow, right, every single illegal will be gone, every single illegal will be gone, it would only solve a tiny part of the problem. And that tiny part of the problem, as I said, is completely eclipsed by this unbelievable wave of legal migrants. So here in the UK, we have 1,000 illegal migrants turn up on our shores per week. But legal migrants, we have an incredible, like, 17,463 turn up per week and settle permanently. They are the net migrants. Now, we have over 1.3 million legal migrants arriving per year, which you know, is just, you know, insane. You're talking sort of like 25,000 people arrive in Britain legally per week on some kind of sort of work visa, etc. And of those, 17,463 stay permanently. Now, those kind of numbers are so swamping that even if you did say, right, the illegals are definitely going, the illegals definitely going, unfortunately, would not mitigate or would not sort of mitigate the problem or weigh against the problem of the legals. The legals are just so great in number that it puts us at such a disadvantage. And my big concern about Trump is, despite all of this, and despite him doing what is essentially, you know, which is essentially good stuff, is that at the same time, he's still talking about the need for more legal migrants to come here. Oh, and it's so disappointing, because what I don't want to see is Americans going to sleep. I don't want to see Americans saying, well, hey, you know, when it comes down to it,
I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get more tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get more tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it. Contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A five-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
Hi, Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
Oh, and it's so disappointing, because what I don't want to see is Americans going to sleep. I don't want to see Americans saying, well, hey, you know, when it comes down to it, the problem's solved, the illegals are gone, only to be completely replaced by a wave of cheap labor that Trump is letting in. And that is really my big concern.
Yeah. And, you know, Elon Musk, during the period when we were waiting for the inauguration, he got into a big spat on Twitter where he called his own supporters retards.
Yeah, because, dumb racists and all that, yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, there hasn't been a change on this policy yet. And with Trump saying all sorts of things, and you never know what – I mean, you never know what he's going to say – and then you never know what he's going to follow through on. So, yeah, there's plenty of room for concern. And we'll just have to see how that goes. You know, when he first made the statement that he wanted more legal immigration than ever before, I believe that was the 2019 State of the Union. And that's when people like Jazz Hand and Mike Enoch, they jumped off the Trump train right then, and Eric Stryker. They all jumped off right then. He made this State of the Union. The Republicans had lost control of the, I guess both the House and the Senate, and or at least the House. And he was trying to be conciliatory. And his speaking point, talking point has always been, I'm building all these factories. I'm building so many factories, bringing back all the factories. We don't have enough people. And of course, the response should be, if the factories aren't, if you're creating jobs that aren't for Americans, then no thanks. We don't need the jobs. We don't need the factories. Don't bring back factories if it means you're bringing in workers. That should be an easy point. And there are people in the in Trump world and in MAGA land who can make that point and maybe give it some currency. But we'll just have to see how that works. I don't know if it's going to happen. But at any rate, that's where we are today. I think we're pretty much out of time. Any final thoughts? And do you have any good videos out to recommend to people?
Yeah, I've been very, very busy. At the weekend, I did a couple of streams. I did one reviewing the attack piece on Australian nationalists, and I reviewed that and exposed the journalists and their agenda. I also did a video called Remigration is Not Inevitable, talking really to people who are saying, you know, oh, it's all happening, it's all happening, we're winning. And sort of urging caution on that, because, as I say, I have lots of misgivings about what's going on now. And I'm not saying there is no progress being made, but what I am saying is celebrating before you've actually won is a major mistake.
Sure it is. It sure is. Okay, well, thank you very much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's been a very, very good show, and I'll see you same time next week.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National People Radio. Thank you.
Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit RepublicBroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.